These days, home is where the everything is. Your work, your gym, the kids' school, your whole life. Xfinity XFi is internet built to handle it all. With XFi, you get the fastest speeds for all your streaming needs, coverage for all your devices, parental controls, and the Xfinity app to control everything. Keep your whole house humming with Xfinity XFi. It's simple, easy, awesome. Go to Xfinity.com/XFi to learn more.
The Awakening You. The answers are within.
Welcome to the Awakening You podcast, reminding you that the answers are within. My name is Scott Goyette, and I am your host. Each week in this podcast, I will be sharing some simple yet very useful tools to help you dive deep and discover how infinitely powerful you really are. The show is based on specific growth models created by the Go Love Now movement that will help you choose love and move through your fears. The love model, L-O-V-E, stands for listening, observing, voicing, and empathizing. The fear model, F-E-A-R, stands for forgiving, eliminating outdated beliefs, accepting yourself and others, and rising up and becoming resilient. During each podcast, my amazing guests will share their experiences with using these tools and how you might benefit from using them as well. All information shared during this podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. Nothing from this podcast should supersede the directions of a doctor or mental health professional. So here we are today with a really good new friend of mine, Derek Schultz, and he is the Director of U.S. Operations for SBLTT, or SBL Technologies. He's going to tell us a little bit about some new technology and science that we are finding in defense of COVID-19. Hey, Derek, how are you?
I'm doing great, thanks.
Sounds good. So tell us a little bit about what you guys are doing right now over at your company.
So what we're doing is we've got a new test, and by new, I mean like within the last 5-6 days that it's become FDA approved for us to start selling in the US, that essentially gets away from the existing COVID-19 testing. So one of the big criticisms in the media is that there hasn't been enough testing and that the testing has been very restricted to only people that have got severe symptoms or that present a certain way or meet a certain demographic filtering criteria, and that it takes a long time. So this test is based on antibodies. So once your body has started to interact with the virus and started to produce antibodies, then this test will be able to pick up those antibodies and tell you that it is a COVID-19. The real value in this is confirmation. So if you have symptoms, if you go to the doctor and you can get this test done, the results are available within about 10 minutes, and it will tell you if your symptoms are just a seasonal cold related, maybe you caught influenza A or B instead of COVID-19, or whether it is in fact COVID-19 and it's something you need to look out for, the COVID-specific symptoms that are troubling people in the media these days.
Wow. So correct me if I'm wrong. A lot of people are talking about the current tests are swab related, and you put the swab, you know, way up your nose. It takes a couple of days to process. So yours is different. Exactly how?
So this test consists of a finger prick. So if you've ever had your iron tested at the grocery store, sometimes they do that. Or if you know anybody who's a diabetic needs to check their blood sugar, essentially same type of finger prick mechanism. A drop of blood is put onto the test with some dilutant, and then it reacts with the chemicals in the test to make some lines appear if you've ever done a home pregnancy test. So think of it like insulin/home pregnancy test.
Perfect. So that's very interesting. So we're looking at the antibodies that are already present, showing that we would have COVID-19 versus the other test is a little more detailed. So what's the ultimate benefit of this test? Is it pretty much the fact that, hey, I've got this, so I need to quarantine so we can essentially do what everybody's talking about and lower the impact so we're not going out to grocery stores, things like that?
So there's that. I think it's for people at risk. I mean, there are a lot of different reasons that you could get into respiratory distress, one of them being COVID-19. And I think that's the scariest part. If you look at actual influenza numbers and you look at the flu and you look at people that have mild symptoms, it's not really outside of anything. And there's some interesting articles out there that look into how this flu compares to other flus. But essentially what it does is it lets you know that this is COVID-19. right?
Okay.
So you can self-quarantine. The other really interesting use case we've had from some of our commercial clients is also with back-to-work protocols. So if you're COVID-19, when is it safe for you to go back to work? At what point do you no longer exhibit symptoms? Does that mean you're safe to go back to work, or is the virus still active? And so there's two different antigens that the test picks up on. One is kind of the early fighting that your body does, and the other one is where your body's building resistance. So once that early fighting antigen goes away in the test, it tells you that the virus is no longer active in your system. Your body's effectively fought that off. Now you've just got the long-term antibodies that are still present in your system that will help you fight it off in the future. So this will help companies go through and determine when it's safe for people to go back to work so that they don't have outbreak problems or they're not continuing to contaminate people before they're ready for back to work.
Wow. So that actually could be amazing because, you know, we see right now in the country, there's almost, you know, two ideas. There's one, we got to get the economy back on track. There's one, we've got to take care of the people. But like anything in the world, there's gray in everything and there's some hybrid of both. So your product could significantly assist in that. How quickly do we get back to work and keeping things safe for everybody, correct?
Yeah. And I think in addition to that, by having more tests out there for people that have got it, I mean, the disease has been on shore longer than we've known it's been on shore. The Princess cruise ship was an interesting example of that. They didn't know that the Princess cruise ship virus existed before that thing started. And, you know, there was an outbreak on there and all of those other things. So it's been around longer than we've been testing for it. And the testing that we've been doing has been highlighted in a lot of media has been inadequate because we're only testing people with severe symptoms. So I think what this has done is create a lot of fear in people that some of these numbers are true and, you know, gospel, so to speak, when the reality is that the testing has only been focused on a small subset of the population. And what you're seeing is a disproportionate reporting of the actual data. So more people being tested, more people testing positive even, and surviving that and showing that, you know, that there are a lot of people that are getting the disease and that can still survive that with normal or in some cases, not even flu-like symptoms, I think would do a lot to help calm people down and feel a little more rest assured that this isn't some sort of end of days thing that if you get it, you're going to be headed to an ER and put on a ventilator and spend the next 3 weeks there. Because there are a lot of people that get it, that recover from it, that were never tested for it, go on to lead happy, healthy lives already.
So let me ask you this then. So what about somebody in December or say January who feels like they might have had COVID-19 and we see that a lot right now? Would this test be useful because we could check with those, you know, post-symptomatic antibodies? Would this be smart for them to take that test and know that they've already gotten it?
And that's a really good question. The test will pick it up, so it will go into the IgG antibodies, so those long-term antibodies, and it will show that you have those in your system, which means that you've recently been infected with that in the past, but that you've recovered and that the virus is no longer in your system.
Perfect. So based on the findings right now, and you don't have to answer this if you don't feel scientifically qualified, but does it seem like once somebody's had it, they're most likely not going to get it again? So that might be a good thing to know.
I'm far from being a scientist, and I don't think anybody's made any, you know, definitive statements around that. But the general scientific theory behind viruses and antibodies is that that's the role of an antibody. And so unless the virus should mutate for some reason, again, which is, you know, mutated to get from animal to human and then mutated again to get from human to human, unless it should mutate again in a way that allows it to reinfect yourself, similar to what you see with seasonal flus, I don't see why you would get it again, at least in this flu season, unless there was another migration or another mutation.
Sure. So that's a good answer. So let's talk a little bit more. I know you said you brought a few articles with you and some information that you thought might be great for the listeners. What are some of those things that you have to share?
So I think what, you know, is a little bit of scariness out there for a lot of people is, you know, the raw numbers that are being thrown around. But if you go back and you look at data just in its raw form, and this is the cdc.gov site, so this is nothing special or new to me, but the 2018-19 season, so this last year that they've got full data on that, they estimated that 35.5 million people got sick with influenza. 16.5 million people ended up going to a healthcare provider. 490,000 people were hospitalized and 34,200 people died from influenza in 18-19. And so this is pre-COVID-19. This is a regular flu season that has come through and 35.5 million people caught the disease. Now, I'm not saying that this is the same as what you're going to see with COVID-19. Obviously, there are a lot of things that people don't know about COVID-19. And COVID-19 tends to attack lungs. And that's really what makes it a little bit different from other flu type symptoms that you could get. This is this one really parks itself in your lungs. And for people with any kind of respiratory distress or pre-existing conditions or pre-existing genetic bias in that regard, can become very, very sick. And it's not even that it's not recoverable, it's that it requires extensive medical intervention with respirators and whatnot, which there just is a shortage of. And that's, I think, where the biggest scare is around a lot of this stuff. But for the most part, especially if you look at, read another article that said the total number of cases, they estimate in the U.S., where are we at now with that one? That one changes on a daily basis. Let's see if I can find the latest one.
Is it 87,000 or...
The U.S., we're 91,156, according to NCOV 2019 Live, and World Meters has us at 94,000. So, you know, we're at 94,000 that have tested positive, but that number in reality is probably the actual number of people that have gotten this that either had mild symptoms or, you know, thought it was just a cough or allergies and it kind of subsided and went away on its own, is anywhere from 11 to 100 times what we actually have confirmed cases. Again, because there's been inadequate testing, because a lot of people are coming in with symptoms and they're getting turned away or just told to go home and self-quarantine for 14 days, people are not getting the full story about what's going on with the disease en masse. And because of the lower quantity of testing, it's making the mortality rates, it's making some of these other things seem far more extreme. I mean, if you've heard the 3 or 4% fatality rate on these things, well, that number changes pretty dramatically if we multiply the total number of cases by 11 or 50 or 100. That 3 to 4% goes down to 0.03%. So there's a pretty significant difference between 0.03% and 3%, for example. And this is the kind of, you know, statistical distortion that the media, I think, has latched onto and has really created a lot of the fear that people are running with right now.
Sure. So what I'm seeing, and, you know, maybe this is true or not, but it really seems like the biggest issue is flattening that curve. And the reason being is the bottlenecks in hospitals that don't have enough respirators. So if we've got a bunch of people with asthma, COPD, cancer patients, people who are immune compromised and definitely have lung issues, that can be a problem when we need a certain amount of respirators. And that seems to be what happened in Italy, correct? That people couldn't be served.
Yeah, don't quote me on the stats here. I was speaking with a physician the other day, and he was telling me about one of the differences between the U.S. and Italy. And so the stats I didn't fact check these, but you know, he'd cited that Italy's system has about 13.6 ICU beds per 100,000 people. And he said the ratio in the U.S. is about 36.8, I think he said, or something like that. ICU beds per 100,000 people. So, you know, they were coming from behind to begin with on this one. And then I think demographically, and again, don't quote me on the stats here, the age dynamic or the age demographic in Italy has a lot more elderly people that fall into that 65 and above category that this virus seems to hit hardest. So they kind of got like two strokes against them, as well as they were early on. So they didn't really do anything to mitigate that. And they didn't really know what they were dealing with when it first hit. So I think that's part of why Italy got hit hard. Stuff that's happening differently here that I think people have learned from what's going on in Italy. I read some articles. I mean, Elon Musk bought 1 million ventilators, right, and has had those shipped on shore. I read an article that came out yesterday that the founder of Dyson, the vacuum cleaner company, which makes sense. They know how to build a pump, I guess. They've gone through some rapid design work on their side, have a new respirator product that they're going to have in production in April and have got orders for 15,000 respirators. So part of this is, you know, how do we flatten the curve? The reason for flattening the curve really comes down to the fact that medical facilities don't have the respirator bandwidth to be able to deal with this because it hits lungs so hard in such a small percentage of the population that does get affected that way.
Now, that's good information. I did read that Dyson article too and looked at Elon Musk, and it seems like everybody's really starting to step up. One of the nice things that I think we're all seeing is the opportunity within the problem, and that's, you know, what we've been seeing in all of existence is you find an issue and you solve it. And I think we're going to have more preparedness when things like this happen in the future. I think that's the silver lining to this. We only have a couple more minutes. Is there anything that you want to share as far as articles or anything that people might want to see or direct them to anything?
I'll send you the links to a few of the articles that I had. The analysis around the Princess cruise ship was really interesting because it was very factual. And it basically just looked at it like, look, we had this human Petri dish experiment. Right. And so we had 3,700 or 3,800 people stuck on a boat for an extended period of time with this virus. It was an outbreak. They didn't know anything about it when it first started. And this is how it affected that population and how that population relates to society as a whole. So obviously the population distribution on the cruise ship was skewed higher to the, you know, over 60 crowd than, you know, the under 20 crowd. So it doesn't reflect, you know, the population as a whole as it relates to the United States. But I think it's a good analysis of the potential for the disease and what it looks like in quasi-controlled type environments, if you will. And then you can kind of draw your own conclusions from there in terms of, you know,
Where did you find that article again?
This article.
The only reason, because most of the people are going to be listening to this from...
So it's on a website called whatsupwiththat.com. And then the article is called Diamond Princess Mysteries.
Sounds great. So what about your company? Can people take a look at what you guys are doing there and follow you to see where you're doing things to change the world?
So our website is sblt.com. You can find out more information about the test. Unfortunately, at this time, the FDA doesn't allow us to sell it directly to consumers. So we're working really hard to try and get in touch with, you know, occupational health and safety companies, anybody that's got, you know, back to work protocols or is looking at how to manage this. Or if you've got a work population that still has to come to work, you know, how can you manage outbreak and how can you manage back to work, as well as healthcare practitioners and anyone in the healthcare distribution space to try and help us get more of this test out. I'd love to be able to just set up shop and start selling it directly to consumers, but unfortunately it's not certified for that at this point.
Well, Derek, thank you so much for helping our audience members once again choose love over fear. And your information was super appreciated, and I'm sure everybody really got something out of it. I sure did. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me on today.
The Oregon College Savings Plan can help fund your child's dreams and ideas. But it's not just for college. It's also the Trade School Savings Plan and the Books and Materials Savings Plan, even the Room and Board Savings Plan. With fewer educational expenses to think about, your kids can focus on what matters, their future. Start saving today to support your child's tomorrow. Learn more at OregonCollegeSavings.com.
If you're a defender fighting to protect your organization from cyber attackers, you must be successful ending attacks every single time. They only need to be successful once. Cyber Reason reverses the attacker's advantage. Our future-ready attack platform gives defenders the wisdom to uncover, understand, and piece together multiple threats, and the precision focus to end cyber attacks instantly. Together, we are the defenders. Cyber Reason. End cyber attacks. From endpoints to everywhere. Learn more at CyberReason.com. That's CYBEREASON.com.